Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, exclusively here on WEEB. We want to thank our sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980. Great place for breakfast and lunch. Great place to handle all of your catering needs in the community. I am Steve Woodward, as always. I am joined by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
Well, we will get right to our program because we have a special guest joining us momentarily and a lot to talk about with him. But we, of course, must honor our tradition of identifying this week's public enemy number one. And this was a slam dunk. When I saw this video and audio, I knew right away this guy was going to make the cut easily. So you may be familiar with James O'Keefe. He is renowned for his famous undercover recordings of unknowing, unsuspecting people actually telling the truth because they don't know that they're being recorded. And he has used this method to uncover any number of nefarious organizations and individuals. So recently, he sent one of his young ladies into the field to have a conversation with a regulatory scientist from Johnson & Johnson. Now, why does that sound familiar? Johnson & Johnson. Oh, yeah, I know. They were one of the pharmaceutical companies that rolled out a so-called COVID vaccine in the early days of 2021, along with Pfizer and Moderna. And you will recall Johnson & Johnson's distinction in that race to the bottom was that they had a one-dose shot. They didn't require two. So anyway, time has gone by. We have seen the narrative about the vaccines begin to slowly crumble, that they were safe and effective, that they were safe for children, that they had no side effects, and on and on and on. So this young man, Joshua Rice, Johnson & Johnson scientist, thinks he's having an ice cream with a perky young lady who's just curious about what he does for a living. Play clip one.
There's no proof. I mean, none of that stuff was safe and effective. If you didn't do the typical test, like the typical process, that's why it takes so long to get a product on the market. The typical process is all this clinical trial testing and stuff in a small population. This was just, let's test it on some, you know, lab rat models, analyze and see if it works and stuff like that, and just throw it to the wind and see what happens.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure somebody's going to get sued for that stuff eventually.
The lead regulatory scientist for Johnson & Johnson went into detail about how the federal government applied heavy pressure on Big Pharma in order to hastily create the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine, encouraging speed over efficacy or safety.
Do you have any idea the lack of research that was done on those products? Like, you shouldn't be surprised that this happened. It was pretty much the government kind of made a deal with pharmaceutical companies and kind of pressured the pharmaceutical companies, because we're not going to say no to the help, like the government. Like, the government's like, yo, these three big ass companies, we need help. We need to figure this out. You're solving this problem.
Was that Operation Warp Speed?
I mean, we basically just had a race to figure out who could solve it best. Like, people wanted it. We gave it to them.
People wanted it. We gave it to them. So there you have it. And of course, you know, this is now, all with hindsight, we're not really that surprised by anything this guy just said. But when you think back about all the lives that were turned upside down, careers that were ended, children who were denied their normal educational experiences, from which they have still not recovered. All the things, the clashes between members of families, you know, at Thanksgiving time, and all the terrible stuff. When you hear this, it just sort of pulls the scab off that wound again, and makes us all the more determined, I think, that all of these pharmaceutical companies should be held to account. Now, two of the organizations, I should say, that couldn't wait to scold us and preach to us that we all must be vaccinated and then boosted and reboosted to save grandma and the children and everybody else. Among them were National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting System, both of them underwritten by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. A wonderful thing happened in the chamber of the United States Senate this past week, albeit with not a unanimous vote. Nonetheless, passage occurred to defund, essentially, NPR and PBS to the tune of about $1.1 billion, with a B. This is long overdue, of course. In addition to the $1.1 billion to defund NPR and the lion PBS, all that $8 billion additionally is being stripped away from this U.S. aid agency for international development, which, as we've learned, is underwriting drag shows in the Congo and DEI programs in Tibet and all these other things that you can't even make it up.
Transgender rights in Brazil. I want to go back to this Johnson & Johnson thing,
yes,
real quick,
please,
though. Is, you notice he talked about, you know, a decrease in, I can never pronounce the word, I'll just say effectiveness, right? But he didn't say that they threw ethics out the window because they couldn't be bothered by those pesky little things called clinical trials. And, you know, look, the government doesn't just force industry. Well, first, they were willing, right? But another example of the Biden administration, the government forcing industries to do stuff is the electric vehicles, right? You know, the Biden administration and the leftists forced, Ford, GM, all these companies to invest billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars in electric vehicles that nobody wanted. The minute that mandate, and they couldn't sell them, the minute that mandate was lifted, they all went running back to the internal combustion engine. But that cost the stockholders hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's just the government. You know, by the way, that is the definition of fascism. Fascism is when, unlike communism, where, you know, the government owns the factors of production, in fascism, the government teams with industry to control the factors of production. And, you know, the closest thing to fascism, you know, let's just, you know, crony capitalism is fascism. And this right here, you know, the government dictating to these, well, in this case, willing companies on the vaccines, or, you know, foisting it upon, you know, the car manufacturers, that's crony capitalism, which is fascism.
And, you know, it's worth noting that earlier this year, Johnson & Johnson actually said they were basically bringing production of the jab to a halt because of declining demand. But I have a feeling that they were more concerned about just getting it the heck out of the market to decrease the potential long-term side effects that they know are coming, my guess.
Right. Well, also, you know, once the government stopped subsidizing it, they stopped doing it because there was zero demand. Once the government stopped mandating it, once they stopped having USAID, you know, paying money to advertise it and support it and stuff, once all the government money dried up, it completely went away because there was never any demand for it.
So we'll tie that back into NPR and PBS, who were all on board with that. They were also on board with all kinds of other woke stuff, reporting it gleefully, using our taxpayer money to pay for their producers and their editors and all that other stuff. One of my favorite Republican senators, sometimes it makes me just want to move to Louisiana, Senator John Kennedy, had a few examples of the absurdity of NPR and PBS. Please play that clip.
Here's another one. This came from Louisiana Public Broadcasting. Becoming Papa, Father's Key to Gender Justice. I can tell you that every mom and dad in Louisiana, when they lie down to sleep at night and they can't, they're lying there worried about gender justice. I love this one. This is from one of my local radio stations in Louisiana. Arguments that trans athletes have an unfair advantage lack evidence to support. What planet did this reporter parachute in from? You don't have to be a Latin scholar to see that these articles are biased. Every single one of them. At the federal level and at the state and local level in Louisiana. And you know what? That's the right of these state and local television stations. They have the right to say this stuff. But they don't have the right to say it with your money.
Yep.
There you go. Nails it,
you know,
as he always does.
It is truly an upside-down world when our favorite senator is a Kennedy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and our favorite director of Health and Human Services is also a Kennedy.
Right,
too.
Right.
So there you have it. It's getting a little Alice in Wonderland around here. Now, I want to introduce our guest for this week. We've been wanting to have him on, and we've got a lot to talk with him about. He is Kent Meisgaetz. He is a local business owner, in fact, owner and president of AeroSouth Technologies. We know him also as a fervent education reform advocate, and he has a track record that demonstrates that, which we will talk about, which started over 20 years ago when he had still a child in a Wake County public school and began to realize that the industrial educational complex was spinning out of control. And of course, one of the unapologetic proponents of that is this sort of insufferable president of the American Federation of Teachers, who recently had a little meltdown at one of these anti-Trump rallies. Let's hear from Randy Weingarten.
You are the community to this president's chaos. And together, we build a future of opportunity and justice for all. Hope over fear, aspiration over anger, the promise of America for each and every American. That is what we are fighting for today.
Thank you, Randy, for reminding us that you can say a lot of things and not say anything at all. So that's
So two observations. One is, why are leftists always so angry, right? But secondly, liberty and justice for all. Like, without this hardcore leftist head of the teachers union, isn't that like, and liberty and justice for all? Is that it seems like I've heard that somewhere before.
Yeah.
Like, she's just introducing liberty and justice.
Right, yeah.
These people are absolutely insane. And the fact that these are the people who rise to the top, man. They're like turds in the punch bowl.
Yeah.
You know?
And I guarantee you she didn't find those descriptions of liberty and justice in any of the textbooks that she approves. That's for sure.
She's probably never even heard of the Pledge of Allegiance.
But I need to be like a...
And if she did, she's against it. That's what kills me. She's probably against reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, but then she just plagiarizes part of it.
So what I need to do right now is I need to do our audience a favor, and I need to sort of shrink into the shadows here and allow Kent and David to talk. David, of course, a second-term member of the Moore County Board of Education, and Kent, of course, very involved in the development of alternative educational paths and the importance of apprenticeships for our kids in addition to book knowledge. So, Kent, why don't you tell us a little bit about your overview of the state of affairs with regard to public education, both here in Moore County and then beyond.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for having me. I'll get right to the point. In my opinion, government schools, as I call them, have been an abject failure. It was an interesting experiment came around in the late 19th century. Prior to that, we didn't have public schools, but we had an almost 100% literacy rate in this country. We don't have that now. They're very expensive, especially compared to alternatives, and I know a lot about alternatives. And like a lot of other people involved in developing alternatives to government schools, we gave up on trying to fix them a long time ago. We're just not going to live long enough, and certainly our children aren't going to experience that. So, yeah, I mean, there are great people out there that are fighting the fight, like David, and I admire him a lot. I vote for him gleefully.
Thank you.
And he's got a backbone, which is something you don't see too often in government anymore, and we need more like him. Being a businessman, I'm a little impatient, so, you know, politics is really not for me, although I've played my part in it in the past. I'm more interested in building alternatives to it that people can afford, and let's see who wins. A rising tide raises all ships, and there's plenty of evidence to show that. When our kids were finishing their education up in Wilk County, and we, you know, we fell for their giant marketing machine when we moved here. We moved back from Germany in 96. And my kids had gone through German schools, and I experienced a lot over there that sort of changed my way of thinking from when I grew up here in the U.S. And we tried working with others to see if we can't improve a few things. And we quickly learned that the PTA, for one, is just another arm of the teachers' unions. They really didn't do anything for us. There were very few people in the school administration that were interested really in our opinions or offers of help, which
they certainly nod a lot, don't they? They sit, yeah, they certainly nod a lot and smile.
They do. I think they pretty much know that, you know, you're going to be gone in a couple of years and they'll just keep doing their own thing. We did help get a great guy elected to the school board. That was Ron Margiotto, a lot like you, David. Tough guy, great ideas, fought back on all of the lefty crazy stuff that was getting into the schools up there 20 years ago, and got elected with a lot of support, and then immediately the other side worked to split apart the majority that he had, and they just ended up in infighting. And the schools really didn't change a whole lot, although he did manage to invoke a dress code on the teachers. If I can tell a little anecdote, one of the things that opened our eyes, our youngest son came home from school one day, and he said, hey, he and his friends were imitating their English teacher. And we said, you know, you shouldn't really make fun of someone with a lisp. Oh, no, she doesn't have a lisp. She's got a nail through her tongue. And so I called the school director at the time, and I said, don't you have a dress code for things like that? Oh, yes, the students, they're not allowed to have that during the school. What about teachers? Well, we don't have a dress code for teachers.
Right. Isn't that something? I have never, it's funny you bring that up, because I have privately pointed this out to, you know, the superintendent and other people. I've never made a public issue of this, but, you know, other professional occupations, if you're an accountant or you're an engineer, you know, you're expected to wear a collared shirt and slacks and have grooming standards. Sure. And what's interesting, and, you know, we have great teachers in Moore County schools for the most part, but you know, many teachers, you know, of course they wanted to be treated like educated professionals because it is a profession, but you know, we've had principals show up at school board meetings wearing jeans and a t-shirt. Literally, I look out in the, you know, in the crowd, and a principal is required to show up when, you know, their students are getting recognized, and there's a high school principal whose students are getting recognized, and that principal is wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and I'm like, superintendent, I don't ever want to see that again.
No kidding. You're fired on the spot. Yeah, I mean, I saw that even in our apprenticeship program that I helped start in 2013, I was recruiting students out of all, you know, 6-county region around Raleigh, all public schools, private schools, charter schools, homeschools. And I went to a couple of high schools, including Enloe, which in the day was the big magnet school in downtown Raleigh. And a lot of times I couldn't tell the difference between the teachers and the students. You know, and these are kids in rough neighborhoods that have different, you know, dress behavior, let's say, than would have ever been allowed in any school. And I'm still old school, went to high school in northern Alabama. I had teachers that didn't even like to take off their sport coat during the day. We didn't have air conditioning. I mean, we had a lot of respect for those teachers.
I think the transition, then we can move on probably to more important matters, but I think the root cause of that is I think the profession changed from being a role model and a mentor to trying to be everyone's buddy.
Exactly. And there are a lot, you're right, there are a lot of terrific teachers out there trapped in a broken system.
Right, right.
So get back to the point here. I was not alone in this, and most of my peers were engineers and scientists, and things like math and science and physics are really important to us. And we could see that the capabilities of those teachers was just not there, and they weren't getting the support from the administration. And this was even before a lot of the crazy stuff was really in the schools. It was coming. We could see it in Wake County. So a group of us started something called the APEX School Choice Initiative. This was just a year or two after the legislation had been passed to allow charter schools. And so a good friend of mine, Bob Luddy, anyone involved in politics, conservative politics in the States probably heard of him.
Right.
And he had started the very first charter school, something called the Franklin Academy up in Wake Forest. And I had toured it and was just extremely impressed. And I asked him, well, could we do another one of these in APEX? He said, well, normally, yes, but we've already hit the cap because initially the legislation only allowed 100 charter schools. And he said, but I'm going to do a low-cost private version of this called the Thales Academy.
Right.
And long story short, we were able to start then about 2 years later the first campus of that outside of Wake Forest in APEX. We did that first, a K-5 school, and then eventually we built, the junior high school was combined. And it's been just a huge success. That high school today is in the top 25 nationally on the CLT, the Classic Learning Test. That's what most of your top-end classical schools use, that to measure performance. They're always oversubscribed with people. It's about...
Right.
$6,000 a year, $7,000 a year, something like that.
Yep.
They will not take donations. They will not send kids out door to door. They have to, from the outset, we ran that like a business. It had to pay off its mortgage within a relatively quick period of time. Plus, generally, the land on which those schools are built is donated by a developer, because the developer wants a good school.
Yep.
And Thales has been now for many years oversubscribed. They have so many developers offering them land, they can't build them fast enough. In fact, we've been looking around here for that. So, you know, long story short, that became a huge success. Wake County passed below the 70% hurdle here a number of years ago. That is, fewer than 70% of the students attend public schools up there now.
Wait, let me see if I heard this correctly. Just this bears repeating. I want to make sure you didn't have that inverted, right?
No, no.
So did you say less than 30% of the students in Wake County schools attend traditional public schools?
No, it's the other way around. So you've got just under 70% of the kids are in public schools.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I heard it inverted.
No,
okay, that was my shock face. So you prepared a chart.
Yes.
Oddly enough, in Moore County, it looks to me per this chart that about 67% of students attend Moore County schools.
That's right.
So what this is this is parents voting with their feet.
Amen. That's precisely what it is. And free markets reacting to that.
Right.
There's a huge market out there for, you know, students and parents that care. Of course, there's charter schools, which is mostly funded partially, you know, through the state.
Right.
And there are homeschools and
there
are private schools. There are some very expensive private schools. But if you look at the statistics, the average tuition for a private school in this state is substantially below the cost per pupil in a public school.
Correct. Most people do not realize that. Most people look at, oh my gosh, look at how expensive Sand Hills Classical Christian is, or St. John Paul, right? Oh my gosh, look at that. It's $9,000 a year or $10,000 a year. How could I? That's so expensive. Private schools are expensive. Moore County School spends $13,500 per student. The difference is Moore County Schools picks your pocket to pay for it, so you never see the money. Where the private school, you have to write a check. Private schools produce a better result than the public schools at a lower cost. The best way to save money, if Moore County wanted to save money, if Moore County schools really wanted to save money, the best thing they could do is just write a check to Sand Hills Classical Christian and let them educate our children.
That's right.
We would save 30% at paying the full price at Sand Hills, and we'd have a better product. Isn't that something?
It's true. I mean, that's the lie that's perpetrated by our favorite newspaper here in town and others, is that somehow when a child leaves...
To which you are a frequent contributor.
Yeah, often. Yeah, and I appreciate greatly they allow me to do that, by the way.
The if you want to see... So I call Kent the William F. Buckley of Moore County, and if you want to see why I call him the William F. Buckley of Moore County, unfortunately, they changed it so you have to have a subscription to see the comments.
Right, right.
But if you happen to have... Well, I would recommend just borrowing someone's login, and you can read Kent's thoughts in the comment section as he's mixing it up with the Moore
County
fun.
I mean, frankly, it's a lot of fun, and it's fun to inject some facts into the rest of this.
Yeah, because God, the last thing they want are facts. Yeah,
exactly.
You know?
Well, and there's nothing more lethal than an intelligent, polite, well-written reply to a stupid letter or editorial.
Right.
Then this kind of spewing of, you know, profanities and other things, and calling people, oh, you're a racist, you know, for everything that comes out of their mouth. There's nothing better than the alternative to
that's
that.
Right.
And we always look forward to the back and forth. And it's clear that you live rent-free in a number of people's
heads. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. God bless them all.
So,
and Jesus loves you guys.
That's right. That's right. Never
yeah, so,
forget that.
I
somehow.
Mean, that the way that's progressed up there now, they experienced an explosion in alternative schools. And one of the things I found terribly ironic, one of the reasons that people in Wake County bailed out was because of the redistricting. And in the days, they called it busing for diversity. That's what it was called. And to move somehow that, you know, it's education through osmosis. So if you take Johnny and you put him in a bus, and he rides 45 minutes each way into downtown Raleigh, and then you take Freddie, and he goes back the opposite direction, and they sit next to some kid that maybe is not as good. Well, that's somehow going to elevate them all. I mean, it's even worse than Keynesianism, right?
So
they believe this stuff.
Interesting you bring up busing for diversity, because I think you're the one who pointed this out. Correct me if I'm wrong, but... the person that the Helena Wallen Miller, Libby Carter, Bruce Cunningham school board brought down to develop our school reassignment plan was none other than the busing for diversity
right.
lady who did Wake County's school assignment
That's
plan.
Right.
And by the way, Moore, to this day, Moore County Schools is still paying the price for that. Exhibit A is Cranes Creek, and we are paying the price for importing a hardcore leftist to come down here and do our school reassignment plan. To this day, we're paying, and our students and parents are paying that price.
Yeah, it was amazing to see that, and she did it here as a consultant, of course, and
you
know, got paid to do that. But
the academic industrial complex.
Exactly.
If you fell at one place, go somewhere else, and someone will pay you to fell again.
But it's interesting, too, in that she did us all a service, because she helped push a lot of parents over the edge, said, all right, I've had it. I'm out of here. And that creates a market for alternatives, and it's happening here, too. You know, if you go to the School Choice Expo, which I think is still the only one of its kind in the state, so hats off to the people that run that every
very
year.
Well attended.
It's fantastic. And, you know, that exposes, and when I think back of the alternatives we had to education in the past with our kids, there weren't many. Now there's no excuse anymore. I mean, if you really want to take your child out of a school, I have a theory, and that's really kind of based on my experiences in Wake County, in that there's only a third of the parents that really care. Only a third of the parents are going to make the sacrifice to pay twice, essentially.
Right. Yep.
A third of the parents not even sure really where their kids are at any given time. And then the other third of it...
Trust the government.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they think about it when they went to school.
Right.
You know, you look, yes, they think about it when you and I went to school, and it's not the same public schools.
When you've got a third of them, it's just free daycare. I'm changing my opinion on that, because we're just about at that one-third level now in this county maybe even ahead of it in Wake County, of the parents are saying, okay, it's going to be painful, it's going to be difficult, but it's our child.
More and more people are waking up.
Amen.
Well, part of driving that, too, is with stagnant wages and the mm-hmm. increase in child care.
Right.
You know, if you're a young family, if both spouses work, you're spending more than one spouse's income to provide daycare and stuff. Just the economics have changed because incomes have dwindled in relationship to the cost of stuff. And now you can't afford it. So you might as well educate your child because you can't afford to put them in after daycare.
That's right. That's actually an important point. One of the things that we always looked at Thales, because for us, I mean, the bottom line, yes, academic excellence, they are not sports academies. Is how does the annual cost compare to a year of daycare? Our thinking being, if a young family can afford daycare for an infant, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a year, then they certainly should be able to pay for it when that child's 5 years old. Yep. And they've been able to do that. And that's a huge argument. That's we had parents come to us and say, I can't wait till my child is five because I'm going to be paying less because they have them in daycare. Now they're in school. They actually pay less at Thales than they were paying for daycare. So that's a real game changer for a lot of families. You know, whether it's homeschool, and we're good friends with Lee and Rob Bortons. We just think the world of what they've done. We're so proud of them here with Classical Conversations. Yep. My son here, they homeschool their four kids, and they're just doing wonderfully. Yeah, but
so people aren't familiar with the Bortons and the name of their cup, Classical Conversations, right. It is the leading, if not the leading, it is one of the leading providers of homeschool curriculum, and it's based right here in Moore County.
Globally. And she's an aerospace engineer like me.
Oh, I had no idea.
She's an aerospace engineer. They weren't happy with the education their kids were getting in public schools in Wake Forest, I believe.
Yep.
Because her husband was with Piedmont. And they decided to homeschool. She didn't like the curriculum, so she started writing her own.
Yep.
And that's created a huge business. That's a big employer in this area. Very
wildly successful, and yes, the Bortons are fine people.
Yeah. So, I mean, the bottom line is parents want a solution, they can find it. And will a child from a good family still get a good education in government schools? Probably.
Sure.
Does a poor, troublemaking kid, is he going to get a good education in an expensive private school? No. If he screws up, he won't. So it still comes down to the family, but ultimately it's all about, you got a good education at Pinecrest, but how much better could it have been elsewhere?
Right.
That's always the big question in your mind. And I know it for my children. I even have, I suppose, a bit of guilt that we fell for the marketing machine of Wake County Public Schools. We know they could have gotten a better education. They've done great in their lives, but how much better could it have been?
I ran my daughter through the gauntlet of suburban Chicago public schools. Wow. I mean, talking about dodging a bullet.
Yeah.
But, she turned out just fine. Thank God. Well, tell us a little bit more about Thales Academy, because I bet you at that academy, they're not satisfied with like eighth grade reading proficiency at like 30% or no. math.
No, they test 95th percentile in all grades, in all subjects. And yet, when I look at that school, it reminds me a lot of my own schooling in rural Kentucky and rural Alabama. So a lot of the things they do, just tradition. They learn cursive. They learn character. They learn Latin. They learn math, science. They learn religion. They're not taught a religion, but they're taught that religions exist. They're taught that there are two theories to how, humans were created, including creation theory. They're not taught what to think. They're taught how to think. And it's just been very successful. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to bring back shop classes, because I learned basics of shop. I worked my way through engineering school as a draftsman. And those things were abolished. Huge mistake. That in home economics in the 80s. So I told Bob, I said, we have to bring back shop classes. And we did. It's a big attraction for me. And I'm not talking about like auto shop and things like that. Traditional shop classes start with a blank piece of paper and a pencil. and you teach them the basics of drawing and communication and lettering, and only after 6 months do you let them touch a computer. You teach them hand tools, then you teach them power tools, mm-hmm. and you teach mm-hmm. them how to make stuff. It's been a huge success for them. It was a lot of fun. It was a challenge recreating the curricula, because I thought I could just call up some state like Minnesota or Wisconsin where they still do this stuff and say, hey, can you share me your curriculum? They said, well, we got rid of that stuff. We threw it out.
Right.
So we had to go back. We were able to put it all back together, and they expanded this a couple of years ago. Now every because it was an elective course, a 4-year course. And they've expanded that now. Every child in Thales takes at least 1 year of industrial arts. Every child. It's mandatory coursework. They learn basic how to fix stuff at home, how to fix right. your car.
How to use a ruler.
Exactly. Do fraction, ruler fractions.
How to give change at a cash register. Exactly. I don't know. I mean, I am embarrassed. I'll go to Bojangles and I'll get my chicken biscuit with mm-hmm. Pimento cheese on it. And I'll hand the cashier, I mean, it's not only can they not make change, but they don't even understand how you get 78 cents worth of change, how you combine quarters, nickels, and dimes. And it is shocking.
Shocking.
It's shocking.
Yeah, shocking. And you work in industry, and that's a big problem we have, is to find kids that have any hand skills. But, modern industry is very sophisticated stuff. That's my issue with this new high school, is that now it looks like it's going to be a high school for dropouts. They think industry is going to take their kids. They're dreaming. And we will pick the best kids out of schools. I mean, the top ones that could probably go to any engineering school, that's the ones we're going to hire in industry these days. Things have changed.
So I got a couple of questions, if I could, about the Thales
sure.
Academy, right? So how many Chromebooks per student do they have?
They got on very early with, I should know the name, Apple. It's the Apple app.
Yeah, the Macintosh. Macintosh.
Yeah, so, gosh, this is many years ago. In fact, they were one of the very first ones. All Apple, everyone gets a tablet. Every classroom has a smart screen. They get one. That's all they need. Of course, if they bring a cell phone to school, it goes into a box in the lobby, and that's where it stays until they go home.
That's going
to
be more county schools next year.
That's great.
Thankfully to our legislature.
That's right.
They passed a law.
Good for them.
So have they banned book reports in Thales, or do they encourage students to be able to, express their thoughts in writing and demonstrate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they still have to write it in cursive on top of that.
Good.
And they can do it. And they can probably do it in Latin, too.
So that raises the interesting question, because we've just had that book report debate here in Moore County, and the book report requirement went down in flames after a very short period of time. But, when you hear that, you're like, okay, that's absurd that we can't require a kid to write a book report. Yeah. But when the opponents of it, what is their argument? Is it that the kids don't know how to write in longhand, so we shouldn't put them through the trauma of that? Is it that the teachers don't want to have to take the time to read the reports? Or is it that there's no parenting involved so that the kids don't finish the work or actually read the book? Or what is the problem?
So I was involved, and I had a front row seat for, I had an onstage seat for all those discussions and debates. And, I never thought about it until just now. Till you brought it up. No one ever talked about the students. I talked about the students because I said, look, they have to be able to write, express their thoughts in writing. All the arguments against it, the other side, 100% of the arguments wasn't that it wasn't good for the students. It was, we shouldn't tell teachers what to do. That was literally their only, they defeated what was good for the students. And their only argument was the school board shouldn't tell teachers what to do. Well, if the school board's not there to give direction to the school district, then what's the school board there for?
Yeah, it's a little different at Thales. I mean, first of all, you don't need a teacher certificate at Thales. You don't need a degree in education.
Yeah, and a better product. How about
absolutely.
That?
Yeah, absolutely. And they generally will hire people that are experts in their subject.
Right.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, how about that?
How about that?
Who've done it? Who've actually done it?
Actually done it. A lot of them come out of industry.
Yep.
they don't get tenure. They have a 1-year contract.
Yep.
1 year.
Yep. What have you done for me lately?
If they don't meet the goals, they're gone. And they have lots of people ready to take their pay and benefits is about the same as public schools. They have to compete for them. They have no shortage of teacher applicants.
Right.
And one thing that is interesting how over the years has changed. Early on, I would ask teachers, say, well, where did you come from? Well, such and such public schools. What do you like most about Thales? Well, one of the things I like, I don't get cussed out every day by my students.
Right. Student discipline.
Over the years, that's changed. When I talk to young teachers now, they say, well, I never even thought of teaching in a public school. Mm-hmm. There are so many alternatives out there for the teachers nowadays.
A dirty little secret is the charter schools and the private schools are a place where teacher refugees fleeing the public schools land because they want to escape the stifling bureaucracy. They want to escape the school district politics where it's, you know, the superintendent's way or the highway. And they want to go to a place where they have the students' respect and the students aren't cussing them out.
That's right. You know, and the argument is often, of course, made by the left that, well, these are just schools for the rich white families. And that's nonsense. If you look at especially charter schools, you find that some of them are almost 100% African American. And of course, the whole voucher program in this state, because I know the author, Paul Stamm, is a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. It was always directed to help kids escape bad school systems.
Right.
So some of the requirements to it, you know, you had to come from lower income families and from certain areas, and it was absolute godsend to these families, and they're just thrilled that it exists.
You know, I don't know if you watch the school board meetings. God, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But, you know, I have said several times, and I say this in closed session a lot, it is easy to condemn other parents to send their children to a failing school, or it's easy to tell other parents to send their kids to a school that has brown drinking water. But I've noticed that the members of the central office and the school boards, none of their kids attend those failing schools or that school that has brown drinking water. Why they're purchasing bottled water for them to consume themselves using our taxpayer money.
It's very true. We had some. In fact, a great story on that, you know, Jim Goodnight's probably the wealthiest man in the state.
SAS.
SAS Institute, and he pretty much owns the town of Cary. That's sort of his guinea pig for all of his software that he developed. Well, they put their son in Ravenscroft, which is probably least expensive as O'Neill, and he had some issues there, so he had to leave. Well, their solution was they built Cary Academy, which is just as expensive. And yet, he's a big advocate for public schools. His wife was head of the Wake Educational Partnership, which is basically the lobby that pushes public schools. And yet, for their child, I mean, it was a Duke tuition level school that they built for him and all the other wealthy people in Cary. So, well, I mean, the hypocrites are just...
Bill Clinton sent his kid Obama sent theirs to a...
Sidwell Friends.
Yes, a college tuition level. And I'm not talking like, you know, Louisiana State tuition. I'm talking Harvard tuition.
No, there's not a bus line. There's a limo line.
Right.
I saw, though, and I want to turn to more of the career development side. But
I'm interested
to
hear.
We saw students there. It was there. They lived in a trailer home, and their grandparents or an uncle or somebody, the family scraped the money together to pay the tuition for Thales. We had a bus of them come up from Fort Bragg. These
God
are military.
Bless them.
Yeah. They hired a bus, and these were not high-ranking officers. Because
like they were bussing their kids?
They were bussing every day from Fort Bragg
God
up to
bless
Apex.
The sacrifices
That's right.
these parents make
and
for their children.
A lot of them do that, and you know, thank goodness now there are a lot more alternatives for them. And there's plenty of evidence to show, too, that the more alternatives you have, the public schools get better, too, because you know, you can lobby pretty hard and keep your budgets inflated for public schools, but you can't if the enrollment numbers go down. I mean, that you just can't get around that in the end. So, and, you know, a lot of them have decided, okay, well, we're going to now look at why are these parents leaving and what can we do? And, I mean, some of them have actually done pretty well. So, you know, I wouldn't give up entirely hope on them, but I love competition. Well, most of the time.
Let me say this and we can move to the to what you want to cover. The look, the competition increases everyone's performance.
Exactly.
And you would think that that, and I was always hopeful that that would carry mm-hmm. over to the public schools. But I can say, based upon 4 years of being on the Moore mm-hmm. County School Board, that they pay lip service to mm-hmm. this, but what they've really gotten better at is developing schemes to get more money for students that they barely educate.
Yes.
The Blend Ed program and the Innovative High School are two examples of that. We don't have time to get into it, but both the Innovative High School and the Blend Ed, on the surface, they sell it as this great thing, but really it's just this huge money-making machine for Moore County Schools for students that they provide no to little education for. We don't have time to get in for it. Maybe you can come back another day.
Well, you mentioned the Moore Innovative High School, and I am a member of the Board of Trustees of the Community College. Mm-hmm. So the genesis of this school is $25 million in seed money delivered by Senator McInnes and Representative Jackson. They have enrollees for the fall, the beginning of the fall school year. They had more applicants than they had in room for. So, you know, the wheels are in motion, and this is going to happen. But there's very much a lot of unanswered questions about, well, what is this the objective of this school? And you referred to it earlier. What would your formula be to make this work?
Yeah, I mean, my formula is simple. It's called the Swiss Dual Education Program. They're the best in the world. 80% of all careers in Switzerland start through an apprenticeship, and it's paid at age 16. 3 to 4 years, you learn your profession, and that's not just in industry. I mean, that's every profession imaginable starts with an apprenticeship in Switzerland. They've been doing it over 400 years. They're the world's best. And I've spent a lot of time over there. I know people. The fellow that helped me start the program in Raleigh came from a Swiss company. He was trained in Swiss banking and then changed to industry. They are by far the best. And so if you just follow what they're doing, you can't lose. We were fortunate in that a group of European companies in 1996 imported that system to Charlotte because they were frustrated with the lack of skills and maturity. Mm-hmm. It's called Apprenticeship 2000.
Interesting point, maturity.
Exactly.
That's an issue,
yeah.
too, that we don't teach.
Apprenticeship 2000, you can look it up on the web, and it was an Austrian, a German, and a Swiss company. They followed their program very closely. We were looking to do something similar here, and I met the fellow. He's works at a company called Bühler Aeroglide in Cary. They make large food drying equipment, and he's Swiss. And basically, we just copied the Swiss program. And ours is called NCTAP, North Carolina Triangle Apprenticeship Program, nctap.org. There are about 10 of these now in our state. There's a great one up in Randolph County, in fact, around Asheville. It's called Apprenticeship Randolph. There's another very good one in Guilford County. It's called NC Gap.
So are these in addition to what they do in school, or does this become their school?
Well, you have to look. The Swiss system and the German are very similar in that these are programs that are not run by schools.
No, I understand that.
They're run by industry.
Like if I want to sign up for the one in Asheboro, mm-hmm. so that's in addition to the student attends school, whether it's homeschool or whatever.
Typically, and you can get all the information off those sites, but typically it starts in your senior year. You spend a half a day in school and a half a day at work.
Right.
And then following high school graduation, you're 3 more years in the apprenticeship, and you're spending typically 1 day at a community college earning it was an associate's degree in engineering, mm-hmm. and that's all paid for. In fact, one of our people was able to change the legislation so that it became free for anyone in an apprenticeship. So it's a 4-year program. The graduation rate out of that's about 80%. It's generally very high. You get paid. I mean, our youngest apprentice, he had his own apartment right after high school.
Wow.
And it's not unusual in Switzerland. About 50% of those that finish an apprenticeship go on to earn higher degrees, and they're paid by their employer. Our younger son also, he builds jet engines for GE, and they send him back to college, paid for his mm-hmm. aerospace degree. That's kind of the best way to do it. The role for the schools, frankly, K-12, South Carolina actually does an excellent job to identify careers starting in middle school and then align the child's choices of electives in high school towards that career path. They are evaluated on how well that student is aligned to his career choice, not whether he goes to four-year college or not. It's just that is their desire best to do an apprenticeship, military, two-year, four-year, whatever.
Right.
South Carolina actually does a good job. Nikki Haley was instrumental in bringing that program in. So, you know, we follow the Swiss program. It's the absolute best. There are plenty of examples. What they're doing here at Sandhills, I still can't figure out. And I talked to Ken Benway about this. I think that was kind of his creation, as if he had somehow stumbled across apprenticeships and just didn't. I talked to him. I don't think he was interested.
That's a whole different conversation maybe we can have another day.
He did. And like so many of these programs, they do it in a vacuum, and then they somehow think the government schools have to be responsible. Any kind of a program like that run by government is going to fail. It has to be run by industry because they're the ones that are investing the time and money, and they want to keep that apprentice forever and ever.
So, just a factoid. They call it CTE, Votech, uh-huh. right?
Yeah, I work with them.
The director of CTE for mm-hmm. Moore County Schools is a former elementary school principal. She went right from elementary school, you know, elementary teacher, elementary school principal, wow. and then she became the director of Votech in Moore County Schools.
Highly qualified.
You know, I mean, look, bless her heart. I mean, yeah. I know her. I'm not going to cast any dispersion her way. But you know what? She's good at filling out the paperwork that's required yeah. to get grants and whatnot. Well, but she has no industry experience, none.
I mean, again, what I've seen in Switzerland and Germany is it's industry runs these things. They build their own schools. I have one of my wife's uncles was a retired tool and die maker. He became a teacher in one of these schools. They're not run through the government school systems. They're completely
right.
separate.
Right.
The role of the community college, sometimes they'll need some labs like the welding lab here, the machining mm-hmm. lab. They're great.
Yeah.
And they might use those, but it has to be run pretty much entirely by the member companies. And there are none. As far as I know, there on the board of this effort here, there's not a single industrial company involved, unless something's
to
changed.
To my knowledge, no.
Yeah,
no.
So, I mean, I don't understand something like that. Oh, yeah. What employer is going to take those kids if they're not involved from day
right.
one,
right.
what they're even going to be taught?
Right.
It's totally in a vacuum.
There's a
right.
plant coming in from Pittsburgh into the county, and I'm drawing a blank on what manufacturing sector they're in, but that is happening in one small area, and it's a relatively new development. And we're seeing now with this the positive effects of tariff balancing with other countries. We're seeing industrial production, a trend already that it's going to be increasing. The numbers in June were very encouraging. Companies are what they call reshoring swaths of their production capacity back to the United States. So the demand for truly skilled labor is going to be increasing perhaps more than we've seen it
yeah,
in years.
Yeah, and I can tell you from my peers, given the choice between a fresh grad from NC State Engineering or someone that's done an apprenticeship, hands down, we're going to take the apprentice. Hmm. He knows how to do something. I've got a friend that's got a great machine shop here locally. He got so frustrated with outside people, he just bought more automated equipment. He runs the entire facility by himself. And he said the next thing he's going to buy is a robot. I mean, that's the trend. If you want to survive, you have to do automation, and the people you hire, they have to be really sharp.
Gosh. So we are running out of time.
We are.
30 seconds left, just
yes.
I could do this. So, hopefully everyone knows why I call Kent the William F. Buckley of Moore County.
That's a compliment.
I think we could have chosen any topic. Kent is obviously very interested in education and vocational education.
Sure.
But anyway, hopefully, Kent, you'll come back in the future and join us. This has been a remarkable hour.
And we thank everybody for listening in on this Saturday morning. Let's do it again next week. Let's do what we do every week. Taking aim.